I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on again this week with JB, and I'm joined by Pistol. How are you, mate?
The first bye week always is like nerve-wracking going into it, but I feel like the nerves are a little bit settled. A lot of rank rises I've seen for people who planned accordingly. I mean, this was my weakest bye and still managed to score 1899 and move up 3K. So good start. I'm looking forward to the next two. I think that's where the big rank rises for me will come personally. So yeah, I feel like up and away. How'd you go this week?
We are again powered by Code Sports. I always forget that off the rip. So the buy rounds are such a milestone to look forward to for the veteran players, because they just put a little bit more due diligence into it and reap the benefits a little bit more than the players that sort of, you know, they just go for the optimal team without actually looking too far ahead. And around this time of year, you can see some big rank rises. I did decently, so I pretty much made up the loss of last week, back up to 6.5K. So good little 4.5K rank rise, back around the 5K mark. And next, this buy round coming should be very good as well. I think anyone with 17 or 18 players this week are going to see a good rank rise regardless of what happens. Mm-hmm. The week after is probably my weakest buy. So saving the weakest buys for last is nerve-wracking. but at the end of the day, the weakest buy still is 18 plus, 19 plus. So it's good time of year. Good for the patrons as well. I think they had a very good week. And speaking of, we've got three new signups this week.
Yep.
First of all is Brett Farwell.
This feels like we're going to need a correction in here.
Let me lock in. Fall.
Okay.
Brett Fall.
I feel like it's wrong, but anyway.
That sounds wrong, doesn't
so
it?
So bad. It does not sound good.
Okay. All right. That might be my first of the year. No one has told me yet that I've got one incorrect. Even one of the toughies that we had, he DM'd me and said, you know what? It was maybe minorly, you know, the didn't roll an R or something, but close enough.
Yep.
Next is Michael. Thank you very much, Michael. And are you able to shout out the last one, Pistol?
No, I'm not. I don't have it open.
The first name's Jessica. Do you know the surname for that one?
I don't know.
It starts with a T.
I'm not a mind reader, JB.
No, I think you do know. If you think about it, if you
is use your power is it of detection. Trawny?
You do know it. Why? You're pretending like you don't know it. Jessica Trewarne, welcome to the Patreon as well. So,
and if JB said that wrong, don't forget to tell him.
I was just repeating the pronunciation that you used. I repeated the pronunciation that you used. Right. So that was a joint one. On our Patreon, while we're still here, Pistol.
Yep.
We have the Dr. Supercoach Cup approaching. And when I say approaching, I mean we're probably
<right here.
laughs> 3 weeks behind on plugging the DRSC Cup because it's happening this week. So, for anyone who signs up, what sort of cutoff are we giving them?
Just please do it ASAP. I think, you know, before Thursday would be ideal given the round starts on Thursday.
Yeah, that would be ideal. So, if you sign up ASAP, you will be eligible to quickly slide into the DRSC Cup, which includes prizes for the first, second, and third. It's a round-robin competition. So
round-robin. Some would say knockout tournament.
Is it? What is round-robin?
It's when you
then?
Play like multiple people, but like you don't. If you lose, you're still involved. You just get to play other people. which doesn't happen.
I have been saying that incorrectly my entire life. So I'm glad it's come out publicly. Yep. And okay. I've got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, clearly.
It's a knockout tournament, yeah. Essentially. So, look, if you're not enjoying the Pies thus far, if your rank's getting a little too out of grasp from the top, whatever it is that you're aiming for, or if you've sort of packed it in with your cash leagues, DRC Cups gives you something to compete for in the second half of the season. If you need something to compete for, which, I mean, you might not, you might join anyway and win a massive actual physical cup among merchandise and other things that we give out for it. So our bottom tier is all you need to join, and then you get it's not free entry, but there's no extra cost to go then into the DRSC Cup for some cool prizes, Pistol.
Yep, you just got to follow the sign-up instructions once you slot in, and you're good to go. And we're going to have the biggest bracket that we've ever had this season. So, yeah, we're expecting there to be 700-plus people in the knockout tournament, which is really fun. And that's why we had to start this early. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of work, but I'm looking forward to it and seeing who takes home the Dr. Supercoach Cup this season.
I am also looking forward to that because I've already dusted off a spot for it on my mental place.
Mm, here we go. There's trash talk starts.
No, that's not trash talk. That's all
right.
That's not trash
talk. You're buying one yourself, I assume.
Yeah, I am. okay, Cancer Council, before we move on, what's been happening there? I see the Young Bucks have rallied further than what we expected last week when we did this same shout-out.
No, yes, the Young Bucks have definitely rallied at the very end of the month. First up here, we have Maz. He has one final donation as a Young Buck as I enter the dirty 30s. Well done to Az and Coom for stepping up and doing something other than running their mouths. Much appreciated, Maz. The commissioner says $5 for every sharing that I haven't eaten yet. Young Bucks rally. Well, big donation. Thanks, commissioner. You've got to eat a lot of sharings. Bell and Chariots of Fire. That's pretty funny. Young Bucks rally. Robert Hughes said, my dad got diagnosed with bladder cancer, and this is my first of hopefully many donations. Sorry to hear that, Robert, but thank you very much for your donation. Gibbo has donated again. Forgot to put the hashtag on my last donation, so here's another one. Thanks, Gibbo. Much appreciated. The Wadi Pod, Coom, Bex, Connor all say hashtag Young Bucks Rally. The other Blackie says, Young Bucks Rookie, unreal effort, everyone. Appreciate you all lots and appreciate Azra and Coom for organizing. Great cause, and thanks for you guys to continuing to put out unreal content and help with this great cause. Thank you, Blackie, for your unreal donation.
All right, before we get into the next one,
yes.
Can I just say, because that's the last of the rallies,
yes.
I wasn't on the last couple of weeks. This is unbelievable. And just having a look through a couple of these donations, I'm not going to put monetary amounts to actual people. They know exactly who they are. The amount that people have dug into their pockets for this, you can tell by our total reaching now over $23,000, which I think we set as a goal after the vets.
Yeah.
put money forward. So genuinely unbelievable. Like, I cannot express unbelievable how generous the community is. So we're just incredibly grateful. I can't even put it into context.
This is like nearly a $5,000 rally in the space of like, what, a month or a month and a half,
yeah.
Something like that. So just thanks very much for the, you know, I can't even express it words to the community for the support behind it. It's truly incredible. And now on to Birdman, who said making the rookie error and having the C on Stewart, which is...
Left the C on Stewart and came in at about halfway through quarter time to say, this is what I've done. I felt so silly, but he was on like 45 already. Yeah,
he was gonna,
and it seemed okay. It was going to be okay, but unlucky.
That's rough. Damsock says, I realize I hadn't made a donation yet and I've definitely had a bad enough season to warrant one. Having history of it in the family, I love the emphasis on these donations in the Dr. Supercoach community. Keep it up, Blacks. Thank you, Damn Socks. Jared Searle says, donate for dumb things. Got a phone call while finalizing my team. The game had started. When I got off the phone, I had the VC on Clary, but the C on Dunkley. Yikes.
That's not
good. No, that is awful. And with those, yeah, donate for dumb things as well. Cracked the 23,000 mark for the season, which is just incredible. This week, though, JB... Donate for Donuts well and truly on the cards with people struggling to get out 18 as well. So this is, a mammoth fundraising month for the Cancer Council.
It's this could be, especially this buy, could be the most difficult for people to get a full team on the park. So Mammoth is correct, and I'm glad you mentioned Mammoth, Pistol, because that segues me into my next topic, which is Manscaped.
Nice.
So, lads, Australian autumn is here. It's actually winter now. I think we need a new one of these. Luckily, the sponsors of today's show are Manscaped. They are here to make sure the leaves are falling off your tree as smoothly as possible. Their fourth generation performance package, which includes their signature Lawnmower 4.0, has all the tools equipped to keep you calm and collected through all the weather uncertainty, which there is a lot of currently, no matter what state you're in. Time to join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com. And for 20% off and free shipping, use the code DRC. Always remember, lads, when you trim the weeds, the tree stands taller. So thank you again, Manscaped. And as I always do, I forgot to mention that this podcast is powered by Code Sports. So that's it. That's all the housekeeping. It's not going to be a long episode, Pistol, besides the housekeeping, which just tends to take up 10 minutes each time. But we do have some major talking topics. We're going to keep them short and sharp and really try to hone in on what the community is deciding between this week. A lot of it's going to be player versus player or just talking about a specific position. Essentially, a lot of these questions that we're getting through on our Patreon and things that we think should be addressed. So I'm going to just start off straight away with Sinclair versus Doherty, or to even add to that, Sinclair and Doherty versus anyone else that you think coming off this buy might be a chance, or Sinclair / Doherty versus waiting for Tom Stewart and going a premium down for the meantime. What are your thoughts on the Sinclair versus Doherty debate?
I feel like I should address the going a premium down. I mean, I wouldn't take a donut if that's like the alternative there. I mean, maybe a rookie score if it's still like a good rookie, then that's probably okay, because Stewart's
I'd
incredible.
Be hesitant to even do that because like I know you just said you closed it off with Stewart's incredible, but essentially what you're doing is you're giving up, say your rookie score coming in is say it's Ware, and Ware scores 55, which is a decent score for Ware.
You had to make that Doherty, hard, didn't you? You couldn't do a nice round number like 50.
No, 55 is where I'm comfortable.
Okay.
Doherty / Sinclair, whichever one you're deciding between, goes 120.
What?
Which is well and truly
for the
within
1 week, or as an average for the rest of the season?
Just this week. Okay. No, just this week.
Yeah.
So the difference there that you've given up 55 points,
65.
Why don't I make it difficult?
I told you.
I should have gone around number. Yep. There was no hindsight used at all on this. Anyway, 65. That's tough for Stewart to then chase down on either Doherty or Sinclair for the rest of the season. I know he's capable, but it only takes one more sub-ton or sub-whatever for it to go from, you know, unlikely to quite impossible. So I just think you're playing the percentages by getting the premium in this week, even though in 3 weeks' time, Stewart's going to be a nice juicy price.
Mm. Fair enough. I reckon that one probably comes out in the wash somewhere. Like it's very close. And Stewart at this rate can almost be a VC option or C option.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that might tip it in the favor. But again, it just depends on who that rookie is. Like I probably wouldn't do it for like a Durden, even a Ware, who I don't think will be named. They're probably not the types. Like if it was someone else that was better, then maybe. But JB, Doherty versus Sinclair is a great question. Doherty's last two games have been somewhat injury affected, copping knocks in both of those games. Still managed to put out a 107 last week. I just feel like when you can't decide players that have the same scoring potential, you just go with the cheaper one. And when it's Doherty's 30K cheaper, that's the way that I would lean. I don't really see any discernible difference between those two of them, except perhaps some, you know, disruption with the Saints lineup when Clark and Steele come back eventually. There might be some sort of disruption
that,
with Sinclair.
That was going to be my first question straight back at you. I think there are actually two questions to float about either of these options.
Yep.
Two questions in total. So firstly, Sinclair with Clark specifically coming back is because he hasn't really been getting extra CBAs without Jack Steele. So I don't think Steele affects him.
Yeah.
But Hunter Clark plays a similar wing halfback role. What is the effect there? And for Doherty, Carlton have been leading the competition in Supercoach Pye Eaton. And although I don't think this is something to particularly affect a consistent player with a consistent role like Doherty, if they do regress even a little bit with a more difficult second half fixture run, could we see him go back to 105? Could that be the difference in the two? I know I'm really grasping at straws here, but what do you think of that?
Firstly, I'd say Doherty as a defender, it might not impact him as much as it might impact someone like Cripps or someone in the midfield. So I feel pretty secure in terms of the Supercoach Pye argument. It's not a heavy factor for me in Doherty. And for Sinclair, I think the tricky thing is, you know, while Steele isn't in the side, I don't think Hunter Clark will impact Sinclair at all. But then when they're both back, maybe it impacts. I don't think personally it will, but I'm not as, you know, I'm not like saying it's 100%. It's probably somewhere like 90%. And just because of that risk, when I think their output is going to be very, very similar, that would make me lean to Doherty. I mean, Sinclair has put up his two best scores for the season in a row. But you don't get those scores by trading him in now. He's had his easy fixtures. I mean, those ones against Adelaide and North Melbourne, you kind of knew were coming based on them being easier teams. Saints have a tough run coming up. I mean, it is what it is. Same as Doherty, he plays in the back line. He's probably still going to rack it up, so I'm not thinking he's going to go like badly. But I just think that might cap his ceiling a little bit. And again, Saints are good. Maybe they win half the games instead of losing against some of these teams. They could just be a really good side, and same goes for Carlton.
They've beaten good teams thus far. I think that's underrated about St Kilda. They beat the likes of Geelong just a couple of weeks ago. So I think they're getting a little bit underrated in the sense of they're coming up to a tough run. I mean, Brisbane is difficult. Essendon, not so much this year. Sydney's, you know, about on the same sort of line, if not maybe a little bit better. Same with Carlton. Fremantle, obviously, this year have proven that they're in that top echelon, that top four type of calibre side, but they're not world beaters. They're not going to smash them. Bulldogs are the same ilk as St Kilda as well this season.
It could go either way. That's 5 of 6 games coming up that they could technically lose 5 of 6. But again, they could also
be. It's true.
It's just that little bit more uncomfortable, whereas I do think both picks are even, and I would just take the cheap one, basically, to summarize.
So, based on your logic, if someone was looking to get two of these guys in this week...
Okay.
Someone on this podcast, even...
I have both of them. So, is it me? It's not me.
I mean, Chizo's not here either. So, I think based on process of elimination...
Yep.
That only leaves me. Dan Houston is around the same price as Doherty and 30K cheaper than Jack Sinclair. Are you still firmly in the no camp? I just want a slight update on that one.
Firstly, I don't think our podcast can handle you getting Houston back into your side. Like, no matter which way it goes. If it goes well, we can't handle that. And if it goes badly, also can't handle it. See Butters for the last 6 weeks.
Well, Butters has been good the last 3 weeks.
He has, but we had to hear about it every week. So I imagine Houston going really well or really badly.
Well, that's because people keep asking questions about these players, Pistol. That's not my doing.
Houston doesn't, for me, have the same, like, I guess I wouldn't say floor because his floor is very high, but he doesn't have the same scoring power. If I count his sub tons here, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sub tons, which is actually pretty good. But, you know, I mean, you're looking at Sinclair, who only has 2 sub tons for the whole season. Like, they're not in the same category and they're not in the same realm of scoring. Doherty has a higher ceiling, I would argue, and his scoring as well. I mean, he, as I said, he's cops knocks, but he's only had 1, 2, 3 sub tons, and one was a knock. So they're not, for me, in the same category of player.
Yeah. So Houston thus far, do you think it's just a case of putting it together at the right time and just sort of a couple of higher scores propping him up? He's got a 144 and a 139 this year. putting him in that conversation. Because when I think about all three of them, genuinely, I think Sinclair and Doherty are on so much of a higher level than Houston. But when you look at the statistics, they're just not. They're not putting distance on him. Sinclair's only scored like 60 points more.
Yeah, I mean, Doherty has had knocks. And, I mean, I feel like Sinclair's, you know, going to be putting more gap, especially the last 2 weeks, has put on a decent gap on Houston. I mean, Houston's been a good pick, don't get me wrong, but the tier of defender that you need to be like a top six this season is so high. Like, if you told me at the beginning of the year, like, Houston is averaging 107, you'd be like absolutely jumping for joy. And then if you follow up in the same breath, whereas like 107 is like a fringe top six, you're like, wait, what's going on? It's a little absurd, but it is what it is. He's kind of on the borderline top six. So
maybe we've spoken too much about Houston.
That's the exact reason I don't want you to get him.
No, I'm not getting him. I have the option. I flirted with it for a second just to see what the 30K would do. But then the thoughts of having Sinclair within my grasp and choosing not to go for him became very overwhelming. I think he's just such an incredible pick this year. So just finally, you're opting for Price, Doherty over Sinclair at this point.
Yep, I would be.
Yeah, so would I. And it's only because having watched Doherty in the last few weeks, knowing I'd be getting him this week, regardless of what he was priced at, I had him written down as 560K priced, and he got the knock to the face, and then whatever happened last game for him to not score quite as well. He just has threatened. He's had 40-point quarters in every one of those games, but just not quite gotten there because of a knock or something. So he's definitely a 115-looking guy for the second half of the season. So I absolutely agree. I thought I'd just make you sweat for a second there, you know, on the whole
Houston. Didn't enjoy it, yeah.
I appreciate it. All right, we're going to move into... Let's go into the midfield now.
Let's.
Walsh versus Parrish is my next comparison.
Okay, we'll start easy, I guess.
I think this one's interesting, actually. So you say start easy. What way are you leaning?
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, you mean it's a very tough one.
That is a hard question. I mean, I can jump straight in if unless you had a follow-up question.
No, let's go.
I think you're looking at Parrish, who's like supremely consistent with a low of 97 and then a 99 and then ton. And then Walsh, who doesn't have the same consistency, but his ceiling is much higher. I mean, Walsh has 620 plus scores this season, which is, you know, his scoring power is supreme. But then he's also put out an 89. I guess when he first came back, he got a 90. In these sorts of situations, and they're also like the same price, in these sorts of situations, I tend to favor the guy that's putting out like a higher ceiling, I would say. The reason I'm struggling over my words is like we know Parrish's ceiling is like 180. So even though he hasn't done it yet this season, I do think Parrish's ceiling is there. But Walsh putting out so many really good Supercoach scores makes me lean towards that direction. But to be honest with you, JB, I would be happy with either one in my side.
I think Parrish is on the preferable side of potential variance, if that makes sense. I think any improvement in Essendon is such a boost to Parrish's scoring potential that I think he's a higher percentage chance of blowing up in the second half of the season, even though I think both of them probably just go as they are, 115 plus, 118 plus even. Whereas Walsh, I think, is on the other side. I think if Carlton do sort of regress just a little bit back to the mean, I think Walsh can go from 117, 118 down to like 115 on the dot or something. So I think by getting Parrish, you're playing the higher upside by just such a minute amount that it's barely even worth mentioning. But if I had to pick between the two, I would be picking Parrish. I own Parrish, and he has been like nothing but a joy to own. He's so easy to watch and follow. So happy owner right now.
I mean, I can't really argue against either of these players. They're both phenomenal. At the end of the day, pick which one you want more and which one you like watching. And
that is so true, isn't it? I don't want people to be messaging me in Slack saying, you said go Parrish and Walsh scored 20 points higher this week. Genuinely, at the end of the day, if you prefer either one of these guys, all we can possibly do is show you the potential variance, give you the statistics based on our opinion, and you can use that information. But it is such a 50-50 call that you probably should have just skipped through this part and just made your own decision from the get-go. Don't let us influence you.
Yeah.
Because it's such a tough call, and both of them probably end up going well. I'm just a happy Parrish owner.
All things equal, I would get Walsh, but I think for our teams and structure at the moment, if you have Hewitt, Cripps and Doherty, I probably would then lean Parrish, purely because if I can't separate them, at least if I'm struggling in my leagues, at least I don't have all the eggs in the Carlton basket. Not that they can't all perform, but it just means you avoid the bulldog situation that we just had, where if they get absolutely smushed, all your premiums score bad in the same week, and then you lose your league game. So if that matters to you, then you can, go Parrish instead. But again, pick the player you like, because they're both really good.
Yeah, both incredible picks. The next guy I want to discuss is Petrarca. So I know a lot of people got on Christian Petrarca at a good price, and a lot of people would have been very indifferent about it until the last couple of weeks. So we got on him, a lot of people got on him at 575K.
Yeah,
or less. Yeah, and then he put out the 87 against Richmond for his debut. And then since then, he went four tons in a row, and it was all fine, nice tons Pistol. Too, but yeah. Then he had the flu and got the 53 against Fremantle. Now the 70 against Sydney. In back-to-back games, it's definitely concerning. My thought process behind this is he's got an easy kill against Collingwood, who tend to give up. Not game wise, okay, midfield point wise. Who tend to give up good midfield pie. I'm thinking that's actually pretty funny. I'm thinking this could be just a nice little easing back in, get a low ton, and then I think the buyer would just do him a lot of good. I would not be looking to trade up Petrarca if I had the choice.
So I looked into trading him this week to Parrish. I've kind of talked myself out of it throughout the week. But I guess my thought process here was, one, we've seen how bad gastro and like the flu and all that stuff has impacted players this season. And Petrarca is no different with that 53. So you kind of have to wipe that from memory. It just stings because it was like literally the week before. And against Sydney, I think he had like 15 touches and 45 points at halftime. He was just butchering it. And then, Swans won the second half against Melbourne, which is going to be such a rarity for teams to beat Melbourne this season. Like,
they might not lose for the rest of the year. Yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked at all.
That's right. I think that they will have to rise to the challenge. And as much as he is, a bit of a downhill skier, I think Melbourne as a whole can still take their game to another level, because we've been saying they've been playing in second gear. Like, they can go up another level. And it'll be players like Petrarca that just help them get to that level. And then if he's not good, there's a bailout option later in the season when Jack Steele plays. He's got a break even of 200 already, and Jack Steele can take 2 weeks, and he'll fall down to a price similar to Petrarca, I guess, kind of regardless how Petrarca is performing. He'll just hover around this price, and Jack Steele's going to get to the same price. So if all else fails and Petrarca's looking bad, you can just jump ship to Jack Steele in like 3 weeks' time.
Yep. That's a very good point. I don't think we're going to have to break glass in case of emergency. And it's quite evident that the bigger scores come against the games, the teams that are sort of... It's kind of like a weight. Like the West Coast and Hawthorn game is 130+. The North Melbourne game was a 114, but North actually played decently against them. The St Kilda game, if my memory serves me correctly, is going back a bit. St Kilda played Melbourne pretty well that week as well, a 106. Then 53 and 70 in back-to-back losses. I feel like Melbourne reverting back to their mean, are just going to essentially start dominating games a little bit more. And Petrarca is going to be the main beneficiary considering the last couple of weeks that he's put out. And the fact that it's coincided with having the flu against Fremantle has made it look so much worse. My follow-up question to you is, if Petrarca scores 120 against Collingwood this week and drops down to about 490-95K, would you look at him as a upgrade option off his buy if you needed one more midfielder?
No.
Or are you foregoing
I think it's a don't buy, don't sell situation with Petrarca.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
This is a situation where there's other really good midfielders that most people don't have all of them. I'm talking like Laird and Mills thrown in with the Walsh and Parrish. And if you don't have those, you know, you've still got the Took Miller and, you know, Neil McRae, blah, blah, blah. So there's enough there that you don't quite need to dip into this well. I mean, Zeret, who we spoke about heaps last week as well, is going to be a really good buy. So he's going to be available. And I think I'd probably go there over Petrarca at this point in time. I mean, Petrarca's role is not bad, JB. He had 96% CBAs last week.
Yep,
his season good. High. He definitely could bounce back. And this answer could just be recency bias at its finest. But it's just most of the time you get these premium midfielders, you don't expect their floor to be so low. Like, I mean, 53, but 70 is pretty bad without a tag. Like, at least when Took Miller gets tagged, you know, then he goes badly. But, I guess the other game, Took Miller didn't do very well either. But, yeah, a lot of these premium midfielders, you don't like to get a 70 out of them, especially, you know, Parrish has a low of 97 that we were talking about just before. Also, just wanted to point out, last season, Dees did lose to Collingwood. So, I'm looking
I meant
forward to
in
it.
Terms of a midfield
and I've taken that personally.
Battle. I can tell. Collingwood are on fire.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Actually, they're due for a loss.
No,
and Melbourne are in bad form. They're due for a win.
No,
so
that's not how
this
it works.
Might be the worst timed match for a Collingwood supporter in the history of the AFL.
Don't say that.
I look forward to it. I'm going to
be
watching Petrarca
with
keen eyes
again in round 21. Like, we've played
is this twice. Because this is the Queen's birthday?
Yeah, this week. Clash, but we just play them in such short, like, time frames. It's really annoying.
Oh, that means it's a public holiday on Monday.
Yes.
Oh, that is so exciting. That's actually giving me a bit of pep in my step. Okay, so you've mentioned Zera. I actually want to dig into that a little bit more on our last midfield discussion topic.
Yep.
I hear the names Zeret. I hear the name Andrew Brayshaw, Ben Keys, and for some reason, Ollie Wines thrown around a lot these days. Those four are all very affordable prices as opposed to the Rory Laird, Callum Mills types, and Parrish and Walsh even. I just want to know your thoughts. So Ollie Wines has a 5-round average of 115, 3-round average of 122. I know I always tell people if he's not Supercoach relevant in a Brownlow year, then he's just not Supercoach relevant. Ben Keys has had like one sub-ton all year. Brayshaw has been building into what we thought was going to be an amazing year before a hiccup, but looked a lot better this week despite the 10 clangers. and then Zach Merritt obviously talked about to death without that 50, is having a pretty good season and tends to end the year pretty well as well. So four guys, four interesting options. It might come down to buy structure a little bit because Keys is on the buy this week. Brayshaw next week, Zeret and Wines both coming off their bye now. So just what are your brief thoughts on these four guys as an option?
Yeah, I want to take Wines off the table again every week, put back on the table and just keep flipping that back in the off pile.
Wines in Houston, you really don't like them.
Wines is 575K firstly, so he's not like cheap. He's, you know, Zeret's 50K less. Wines is 3-round and 5-round look good because he has that spike 155 game against North Melbourne. Again, you can't buy the pass. His other games have been okay, 104, 104, 101, 112, but there's nothing to like get super excited about. He just had that 155 in, and I expect the rest of those games to look like the rest of his season, you know, probably
good.
107 next. To 108, 109 sort of average.
I agree.
The other guys, I think, are all better than him. Keys has a really nice run. Adelaide, we've mentioned before that their run home is really nice. I think
similar run to Laird's, actually.
Some would say the same, yep. He's probably going somewhere between, if I'm trying to do an accurate prediction, like 112, 113, so better than Wines. And then Zeret, he got cleaned up by Rowbottom in that game and for that 53, and outside of that, he's not, you know, sub-ton. So Zeret, I think, is closer to that 115 average. He's also the cheapest, so he just feels right in that slot. I think, did you mention another name?
Brayshaw.
Yeah, Brayshaw has his bye next week, so I can't really, like, actively
recommend. What if you're okay with that bye? What if you're all right with it? And
I mean, there's never a reason to then, unless you're playing for leagues.
You're trading in a midfielder this week. You notice his break-even's 101. You're okay with that next buy.
I still think, I mean, I think he's fine. He's probably in the same category as Keys. But, yeah, I wouldn't trade somebody just after that. But I also think they've got a tough run for the rest of the season. Freo, they've played a lot of their easier teams in the lead-up to this stage. Again, they're kind of in that same St Kilda and Fremantle mold of, like, are they good? Should they be really good? Will they win a lot of these hard games? We'll wait and see. And then you've got the whole Fife return, and not sure how that's going to impact him, if at all. It could be positive, could be negative. I don't know. But I also don't like the unknown. So kind of pushes me away from him.
All right, I've done predictions. I've got Ollie Wines for 111 average from here on out. I've got both Brayshaw and Keys at 113 average. Yep. And I've got Zeret at 116 average.
That's high.
So my question is by the way, Zeret 116, he probably has the most variance because he doesn't have a high ceiling, but he does have his floor's not low. But he's like one other scary incident away from that getting blown out of the water. Because he doesn't really, like, he doesn't flood the points in, sort of thing. To like, he's not gonna go 155 against North.
Like, he's not gonna make up for a bad score.
Yeah, correct, yeah. Correct. So I think he's probably got this. But anyway, we're not predicting injuries. 116, 115, 116. I just don't understand the conversation when the guy who's projected to go highest is the cheapest.
Yeah.
Like, if Zeret was 575 and Keys was 525, then absolutely, talk me into the 50K difference. But like, how is anyone considering any names on any list besides Zach Merritt if you're going down the cheap route? And if you're doing that, you're generally doing it because you need pennies. Like, you need a penny pinch. So,
yeah, otherwise get Walshaw. Get the guy. Get Walshaw or Parrish.
You get the good guys. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, it seems fairly easy. I'm actually a little bit sad that I don't have to, like, I've got the money for the big guys. This is going to sound like real small violin stuff.
Boy,
but,
you. My God.
No, I like owning Zach Merritt, and I think that price is what we've been begging for from a really good midfielder all season. Like, earlier in the year, just to penny pinch a bit more earlier to have a bit more freedom these days. But it just never came. Now it's here, and I'm not even going to get the cheap bargain of the year. That's going to be owned by, like, 40% of the comp.
Why don't you get Zeret and Sicily then instead?
Well, let's discuss that, actually, in the second to last discussion that we're going to have here. The discussion between Zach Merritt and Sicily versus, for example, Doherty and Laird.
Okay. Just like, what are we doing with them, or what's better?
Yeah, just where would you rather cheap out a little bit? Where would you rather put the money? Do you think, what do you think the difference is in those decisions? Because I kind of think it's interesting. The thing with me is I think Doherty's good value anyway, so I'm happy to get Doherty.
No, I think,
to go close to Sicily, but maybe I don't know where people are really penny pinching, but people are definitely considering Stewart or Sicily over a defender this week and getting Zeret.
No, it's a worthwhile conversation to have. I have a lot more faith in Walsh and Parrish going 120 plus than I do Sicily. I think it's as simple as that. Because Doherty, I think, is going to go 110, and I know Zeret's going to go like 116. But the downside of Parrish isn't 100 flat, whereas the downside of Sicily is probably 100 flat. I mean, it seems ridiculous given this year, but that's still, you know, we saw him this year get sub 100 with no kickouts, and who knows what's going to happen in the future. So I'm not even going to try and predict that one. But yeah, I think that's the way I'd go, especially knowing that Sicily's still going to have his bye next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, you answered that pretty easily.
You're welcome.
I think I agree because I think Doherty is as good a value in his line as Zeret is in his. And like you said, the bigger guys in the midfield seem just so much more reliable. So if you're talking value versus value, big guy versus big guy, give me the big midfielder every day of the week. I said at the start of this year, the midfield was the place I wasn't going to cheap out this year. And I'm sticking by that so far.
You haven't cheaped out anyway.
I got Petrarca, which was a bit cheap.
I guess.
But I thought he was top eight at the time.
So let me...
And it could be from this
point. Let me throw a question at you. For those of us with completed back lines, and we see Tom Stewart cop that head knock and incoming price fall, I think it's projected to fall down to...
550 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, about 550K in 2 weeks. I need two midfield slots to complete my side. I am strapped for cash. I'm planning to get Zeret this week at 520K, as we spoke about. It's looking tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worthwhile me swinging any one of my mid-defender-eligible backline, which is literally all of them except for Doherty, into my midfield and grabbing Tom Stewart at 550? Or would I be better off getting somebody like the Keys or the Brayshaws at that same price?
Tom Stewart versus Keys and Brayshaw. That's extremely difficult.
I mean,
so
you've projected the scores of Brayshaw and Keys. So now I'm asking for that little bit of JB magic in predicting the Tom Stewart average for the rest of the season. Keeping in mind what you'd said last week on the Patron Only podcast about his run home.
Can I sort of cheat this prediction a little bit?
No.
And instead, that was rhetorical. And instead say that this makes so much sense if you've got an extra trade or two. Say you're at the moment, you're projected full premium with five trades left.
Yep.
Which I think a lot of people were projected more than that outside of our Slack community, but the Slack community have had to do a lot of making up to do. They've had to make a lot of
That's
ground.
That's my situation.
So if you're one of those people who have five or even four plus trades at full premium, I think this makes a ton of sense if you can plan to go one of your worst defenders to a midfielder later on. Like you mentioned with Petrarca potentially going to steal, you could do Daniel Rich, for example, to Jack Steele, and then swing the defender back into the defensive line. All in all, though, I don't love this tactic. I don't love any of these tactics. I think it's getting extremely cute, and I think there's a reason the midfielders are generally the highest priced guys in the game is because they're so consistent. They've obviously got the best roles, and if you get the durable guys, you don't have to worry about them any given week. So I would still, I think, opt for the good run of Keys, or if you believed in Andrew Brayshaw, over getting Stewart in 2 weeks' time, mind you. So, I mean,
it's all about the timing, yeah.
It is all about the timing. It's structure-based as well. I think I would avoid it, but I'm sure you could show me a dozen scenarios where it would work extremely well. So I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I think you just have to plan for it, and just be completely aware of your scenario, because it's really difficult to give blanket advice on it. And as long as you know what you're doing and when and what to expect and when to jump and when to hold and when to fold, you can pretty much make a good situation out of anything like that. I think you personally, you've done stuff like this before in the past and it's worked out well. So I think you have made me hesitant to sort of talk it down because I've seen it be successful. I've just not pulled it off myself. I can understand the relevance.
Yeah, this is something that I have done before. I think Keys and Stewart's probably a really close one. And if the timing worked out that I needed to do it next week, then I would just get Keys and not wait for Stewart because I think that extra week of waiting is too much loss of points. But if the timing works out, fine. Stewart at that price is matching it with the big boys. I mean, he was averaging 120 before his head knock. And honestly, he was going 130, 140 against Bulldogs. Like, he was on fire and he looked amazing. And I was already like, ah, okay, it's happening again. I'm going to miss another 130 Stewart score and that's going to massively hurt me. You mentioned last week on the Patreon pod that he still had 5 games to go at Cardinia Park, which is absurd, yep, given there's not that many games left for the rest of the season. And his scores there this season have been 187, 122, and 174. It just makes a lot of sense to me to do that and then have Jack Steele as an insurance for any of my defenders. Like, Jack Steele will outscore, you know, a Crisp. So with the extra trade, I'll probably be looking to flick a defender off to Jack Steele and just, I guess, buy Steele at his lowest point as well. It just buys me time to, like, wait and swoop. So I'll probably be looking to do that. But again, it just depends on the money situation and the timing. Because we don't know. We assume Stewart's coming back for round 14. But, you know, worst case scenario, they say, oh, he's not coming back for 14 for some reason. You know, it's a really bad head knock or whatever. And it pushes the week out. You know, I'm not waiting around for Stewart. Because it'll just that, yep, extra waiting is just points that I could be having on my field that I don't have. So yeah, that's kind of how I'd see it. I think it's a extraordinary year for these defenders, and I'm just kind of trying to adapt with the times. I mean, these players, like Sicily, who is expensive, but Stewart's becoming cheaper. These guys have been outscoring my premium midfielders on a weekly basis. So yeah, just time to make some of those changes and adapt and roll with it, I guess.
Lastly, to just quickly, well, so there's two more quick discussions.
Yeah.
firstly, Max Gawn. I think he struck fear into a lot of non-owners this week. People who are toying up not getting him back in, people who still have Bruce paired with another premium ruckman, perhaps. This week was a scary week to not own Gawn, showing that he is a game away from the form of his life. 198 Supercoach points. I think he had 28 disposals, 23 contested, I think. Mm-hmm. Kicked at least one goal that I recall, maybe two. He was unbelievable. He's averaging 120 now after we thought it was the year for him to sort of dip back down to 110, 115. All of a sudden, he's having another unreal season. He is 587K with a break-even of 31. I think it's fair to say, and I know we've said this a few times this year, namely when he scored the 172 against Hawthorn, that you might have missed the boat. He might not be cheap again. Now he's cheap again. I'm going out on a limb to say he might not be this cheap again, like, for about 12 months worth of football. So
wow,
it's now or never, I think, for those who don't have Gawn, who have a close enough money situation to make it work. How much are you tearing up to get this guy back in your side?
Not much.
He was worth two premiums this week.
He was.
If he was captained or vice-captained, like, wow.
But you don't get, you've missed the points, right? And it's the same as
his second 170 plus score this year.
I know, and you missed them both.
Third 160 plus.
Yeah, but you've missed it. And you know what
those games, he's going to do it again.
Well, what did those games have in common?
He scored lots of points.
No, think about it.
Bad ruckman.
He's scored this well this season. His really big games have all come against when the opponent has basically no ruckman. I mean, Laddams is, what, 196 centimetres or whatever. That's not really much of a match for Gawn. His 172 was when they had no one, like Lynch was out and Reeves was out, and I think they played Nash and Kaczynski, whatever it was. And then the Port game was when Lysett got injured. So he was playing, Lysett couldn't raise his arm. Gawn has been the biggest flat track bully against bad ruckman this whole season. All of his games where he scored really well have been when the opposition hasn't had a good ruck. All his games where he's versed tough ruckman, essentially, he's scored poorly, except against Darcy where he scored 118. But that's not even like a massive mammoth score either. It's, you know, Darcy can obviously equal that. I don't believe watching him play at when, you know, against good ruckman that he's going to put out, you know, another 190 plus. If that feels like it's reserved for when he doesn't have any opposition. Darcy Cameron is still, I mean, I haven't been the biggest Darcy Cameron fan in the past, but he's in some sort of purple patch right now and rare form. And he's still, you know, 203 or 204 centimeters. Like, he's a big lad. You've got the big O, you've got Riley O'Brien. You've got a nice little patch, 17, 18, 19, where you've got Geelong, Port Adelaide Bulldogs that he might feast against. Then you've got Sean Darcy. You got Darcy Cameron again before Carlton. Who knows what's happening by then. And then Big O again. It's not like the easiest ruck run coming up for Gawn. I don't think...
Doesn't sound tough.
It's not... I wouldn't say it's super tough, but I also don't think it's super easy. I don't think that he is going to go 120 plus. For the rest of the season. I think he's going to go sub 120 plus, which does make him value because he's not priced at 120 plus. But if you're worried that you're going to get absolutely blown away by not owning Gawn for the rest of the season, I don't think that's... I wouldn't be worried about it, to be honest. I feel like this is a hot take based on your response.
I'd be pretty worried. If I had Pruce and money this week, I think I'd bite the bullet and get Max Gawn in.
I don't think I would. Not before. If Pruce is named, I should say, because he might not be. If he's not named, yeah, okay. If he's named, Gawn's going to have a bye, which is just some points lost.
35K is not a little bit of money. That's his prog 111 against Darcy Cameron.
Yeah, that's... And what, you know what Pruce is meant to be getting this week?
True.
Yeah, I mean, Pruce's prog is above 100 every game except for two for the whole season.
Okay. If you assess it again, Pruce plays, scores 110. Gawn plays, scores 150. Are you doing something then, or are we still just sitting on the fence about it? Because I just think it's real...
Pruce's ruck run is the easiest in the game for the rest of the season. So...
I think he has to play, and he has to play in a one-ruck setup to have the ceiling.
He'll be named or he won't be named.
What if he's named with Flynn?
He's scored 100 every game he's played with Flynn.
That's fine. That doesn't mean he's got the ceiling to keep up with someone like Max Gawn.
Sure, but it also has potential to have the ceiling because Flynn might not play every game.
Neither might Pruce.
No, I mean...
back to square one.
I feel confident that Pruce is going to be... the number one ruck. I mean, he's been number one ruck.
Let me just say, I think if you want Max Gawn this week and you can make it work and you don't have to tear up any other grand trade plans, I would not begrudge you from squashing a 50.4% owned player coming off of a 198 who's now going to be a hot commodity for a VC in coming weeks. I would not deter you from doing that. That is all.
as much
as I wouldn't deter you taking the risk either with Pruce, I genuinely wouldn't on either side.
Gawn has a 5-round average of 112, which includes his 198.
It includes his worst games
as well.
Because
he's capable of them this season.
I know he's capable of them, but... to be coming off of the 198 and looking at the ruck run, the form is more indicative than anything. He was marking everything on the weekend. He needs to be tagged. He got 28 disposals.
No, he was unbelievable. I mean, this was one of the games of his life, obviously. But that doesn't mean that's got to continue. I mean, he got a 172 and a bunch of people was like, okay, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. They brought him in at 677K, and then he went 82, 73, 89.
What do you project he scores against Collingwood this
gonna
week?
He's going to get 89, 73, 82, just reverse order in the next three games.
All added together, that's going to be a score against Collingwood.
No, I think...
Did you just go quarter by quarter then?
I think for the rest of the season, he averages less than 120. And I don't know if that's going to be worth a trade to get from Proust to him.
I think Proust averages about 105 to 110.
He's
think
averaging Gorn 110 goes already.
I know. That's think, a lot of games without
you think with
Flynn.
He's played with Flynn, firstly, and now he's got an easier ruck run for the rest of the season. And you think he's going to score worse than 110?
I do.
I mean, that doesn't make much sense.
It does make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Unquantifiable things can happen in this game, like Gorn scoring 73 against West Coast, who didn't have a ruck run.
Now I have to worry about all your predictions for the whole podcast if you're saying things like that.
Let's just look at the end of the year and see who's correct then.
I mean, that's obviously what we're going to have to do because that's how we assess.
105 to 110. I'm not saying he's a lock in 105. 105 to 110, I think, is Proust's scoring bubble. And I think Gorn's is 118 to 123.
Okay. I mean, I said below 120, and you've put that within your range to try
it's
and
high.
Kind of, you're now you're teams. Giving yourself a larger chance of victory, but okay.
They're both in a 5-point scope. You could do the same thing if you really want, but essentially all I'm saying is I will not talk anyone off that ledge. Not a chance in hell.
I think you've got to factor in.
I've owned Gorn from round 1 through round 12, and I'm a happy customer.
I think if Gorn is missing round 14, which he definitely is because it's a bye, and Proust has the extra game, I just don't really see it being worth it, in my opinion.
Okay.
But I'm glad we had the discussion.
I agree. I still think there's a percentage chance that Proust doesn't play every game from here on out. But let's go on to the rookie discussion. Just briefly, last topic of the podcast. We've been asked a lot, which rookies do we trade in? I've been asked about some outrageous names so far that I didn't think anyone would ever be considering trading in. The answer is, we don't know now. We do not have an answer for you right now. We have to wait until essentially the teams come out. And then I think, Pistol, I don't know if you're in the same boat as I am, but I think people will be trading in a lot of debutants this week. Some people, if there are two debutants this week, I think we'll be trading in two debutants this week. Not because we want to, or we want to test the Supercoach gods by breaking a cardinal sin, but I think a lot of people have to get to 18. Mm-hmm. I'm down to the point where if Jacob Ware gets named and no other debutant gets named, I'll be trading in a defensive midfield swing to get him on field in my defense by swinging Hewitt into the midfield, for example. That is how far away I am from getting the 18. I need a guaranteed one player, and some people need two. So essentially, we don't have rookies to tell you to get this week until Thursday when teams are named. And then, hopefully, we have rookies to tell you to get this week.
Yeah. No, I think one thing to be careful of is I've seen some people that have someone like Buka Karmas and then like Ware, and then they're saying, if Durden is named, I'm going to grab Sam Durden for Carlton. And I just look at their team and I'm like, well, then he's going to be your D6 because you just have two guys that are already just defense only. And I think you could get trapped with your team structure just like all over the place for the buys. So just make sure when you're grabbing these rookies that it doesn't lock you out of like having all your right players in the correct positions coming out of the buys as well, unless you plan to trade around it. So be aware of that. Yep. And yeah, I agree. There's going to be... Yeah, it's all going to... I have Durden in my team because I think Ware is going to be dropped. But again, Ware could be named and then I'll just swap him to Ware. I don't know. We'll wait and see.
What if Durden doesn't get up for this week? Or what if
neither?
What if you can't get a... I can't get a defender rookie even if they're named?
Yeah, that's rough.
We have to wait for the people in my position. You are locking in waiting for a forward midfield rookie to get named.
Yeah, it's tough.
It just is what it is. We're all in the same boat. It's like no one's sitting there on a triple upgrade this week, or I mean, someone might be actually. But essentially, the vast majority of the competition needs rookies to be named this week, and they need to trade them in this week. There's no bubble boys that were sitting on saying, we'll get this guy, unless it's like a really good debutant. We're waiting for the debutant. That's our only chance. So we're all in the same spot. So we'll stress together on Thursday when teams are dropped.
We will. And JB, before we finish up, just one last thing I'm going to say about Gorn. I'm sorry, I know we moved on from it. The price.
I was going to jokingly say back to the Gorn debate.
The price is different than when he went 172 and people were trading him for 677K. Like now at 587, I said earlier, like he's still good value. So that means that if you do have extra money, and I know people like you actually do have money and you are able to just like get players that you want to get, whereas I am very much struggling with the players that I want to buy. If you're in the position, as you said, people have 5-6 trades at full premium. If that's how you want to spend one of your trades to optimize your team, then I'm not going to argue that Bruce is going to outscore Gorn. But if you've got the money, then sure, you know, that's not a bad thing to do. I just don't believe it's worth a trade if, you know, you haven't finished your team or optimizing your team.
Yeah, I just want to stress that neither you or I are arguing like heavily for or against one option or the other. Really, it's just debating value. It's debating like how you spend your trades at this time. It's debating sleep at night factor. There are so many things that go into it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think we can both agree a 50% owned Gorn is a good commodity. It's just that is it that much better than the commodity you already own? And that is so much more up to just personal preference or opinion.
And so is it like a better thing for your team than, you know, if you're missing like a Stewart or you're missing a Sicily or you're missing a big mid, like would you rather spend your trades there or would you rather spend your trades, you know, in the ruck? I think that's something you have to heavily weigh up.
Yeah. So although I fall on the side of Gorn, you fall on the side of Proust, we're arguing semantics and we're arguing like understanding the other's point of view and knowing that there are different scenarios affecting different teams. So like I don't want to end with people like, oh my god, they're so far debate. On other sides of this argument, it's not even funny. We're very understanding of each other's argument, 100% and open-minded to it. So it's always good to have those debates. I'm interested to see on the reaction and what side people naturally fall onto. So that'll be a good one to monitor during the week. I appreciate you coming on, Pistol. That's pretty much going to do us for the episode.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you have any questions, you can find us on social media. You can find the Dr. Sugarish page at Dr_SC. You can find myself at Pistol_DISC. You can find JB at JB_DISC. Or Chizo, which is Chizo with a Z_DISC.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we'll catch you guys next week.